Hey everybody, this is Dan Lobby.
And this is Mary Kay Cabot.
And this is the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, presented as always by Sibling Revelry Brewing. And I've got some events coming up for them that we're going to get to a little bit later. But thanks as always to them for sponsoring us. Mary Kay, one of them kind of goes along with the Get Mommy a Beer hashtag. So we'll get to that.
Yes, absolutely.
But let's talk some Browns. Baker Mayfield is coming off a game against... who did they play? Against the Chargers.
The Chargers, Dan.
Yeah, see, it's easy to forget this stuff in the grind of the week. Against the Chargers, he did not play well. The whole team did not play well. And really, Todd Haley talked about it today. Hugh Jackson has talked about it. This is going to be a good test for Baker Mayfield. How is he going to bounce back this week? Because, you know, this team hasn't done a ton at wide receiver to get better necessarily. They've added some guys, but it's going to be about Baker and dealing with this adversity.
Well, if ever there was a week to try to bounce back from such a bad game, to go against the worst pass defense in the NFL is probably a good week for Baker Mayfield to try to rebound. I mean, these guys are bad against the pass. They're giving up a ton of points, including they've given up 125 points in the first half of games alone this season. They've only played five games. So They gave up like 86 points or something like that in the second quarter alone. So they're getting off to horrible starts defensively, and they're just really bad in the secondary. So I actually think it's probably a pretty good week for Baker to try to get himself back on track, and he really needs to do that. I mean, that was a bad game. But I'm telling you, Dan, when I look out there, a quarterback in my mind is only as good as the guys around him. When you look at how Tom Brady played at the beginning of the season, people were questioning Tom Brady. And that's when Julian Edelman was on suspension, Rob Gronkowski was injured, Josh Gordon wasn't there yet. And all of a sudden, people were wondering, is Tom Brady still the amazing, greatest of all-time quarterback that he's always been? Well, guess what? Now, they're off to the races again because he's got an amazing supporting cast. Well, Baker doesn't have that. He does not have that right now. And you know, unfortunately for him, Antonio Callaway's going to have to step up and grow up in a hurry. Damian Ratley's going to have to grow up in a hurry. Breshad Perriman is going to have to turn into something that he's never been before in order for Baker to be successful.
Yeah, you know, especially a rookie quarterback. You know, we see quarterbacks. You know, Tom Brady's one of them who has made his receiving core around him better over time. But rookie quarterbacks, especially, they've got to have some guys that they can lean on. And really, right now, outside of Jarvis Landry, Baker doesn't have that. But Landry also hasn't really done a ton either over these last few games.
Yeah, that is a huge issue right now. It really is. Because when that is your guy, when that's supposed to be, you know, the guy that you paid $75 million to, and you basically are paying him like he's your number one receiver, although he really isn't technically supposed to be like a number one classic X receiver, you need that guy to step up and make big plays for you and to be a leader. And I wrote a column about this week, that he has to be your leader in every way, shape, or form, on the field, off the field, on the sidelines, you name it, he's got to be the guy. And he wasn't that in this past game. Now, some of those 2 of 9 targets that he caught, some of those targets were throwaways. Some of them were off the money. One was way over his head. So there were not a ton of quality targets, but yet he's got to keep his head in the game. He's got to help Antonio Callaway. He's got to help Ratley. He's got to help Todd Haley and Baker. And when the ball does come his way, he can't drop anything. I mean, right now, he just can't drop anything. And you know, he really does. And he talked about it today. He admitted it. He's got to step it up. Those two guys have connected on only 11 of 29 targets over the last 3 games. That's not enough.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing about Landry, he's not a classic down-the-field burner. You know, you're not going to get a ton for him down the field, but he's got to be able to make something happen when he gets the football in his hands. You mentioned it. He's had some drop issues these last couple weeks. There's just not a lot of chemistry right now between Jarvis and Baker, and that goes back a little bit to the fact that, you know, Baker didn't really get opportunities to work with the first team. And I know a lot of people were very critical of that when that was a story. I'll be honest, I didn't make a big deal out of it. In hindsight, I was probably wrong. He probably needed some reps with these guys, needed some reps with Jarvis Landry. And I think the Browns are kind of dealing with the fallout from that a little bit. And the idea that you don't have a down-the-field threat right now. You know, Josh Gordon is gone. Corey Coleman never worked out. Rashard Higgins, even when Rashard Higgins is healthy, he's not really a down-the-field burner. You hope that's Antonio Callaway, but he's still got to prove it. There's just some issues at wide receiver that aren't helping.
Yeah, I mean, the minute that Josh Gordon was traded and walked out the door, the strength of your receiving core went way, way, way down. And what you needed to happen at that time was for Antonio Callaway to really try to step up and sort of replace him, but he's just not ready for that yet. I mean, he has demonstrated week after week right now that he is just not ready to take on that large of a role. And they did have to dial him back a little bit. I mean, you'd have to say that Damian Ratley went in there in this past game and had a better game than we've seen, you know, consistently across the board than we have seen from Antonio Callaway. So even though he was supposed to be the starting X once Josh Gordon left, he just wasn't ready for that. And, you know, he's young, he's raw, he's inconsistent. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have potential, but he's a work in progress. And he's not there yet. And it's, you know, all of these things are hurting the team. I think one of the things, and I wrote this at some point, is that one place where the Browns really erred in the offseason was counting on Josh Gordon to be their starting X this year. We have seen, you know, I've been covering Josh Gordon since 2012. So I would never have put all my eggs in that basket. You know, and I know they had Jarvis at the time, too, and they had Corey Coleman. But you just weren't going to be able to count on Josh Gordon, you know, and he was going to have to be a bonus for you. So they really needed to go out and find themselves a really, really good X receiver that they could count on, and they didn't. And I think that was one of the biggest problems of this offseason.
Yeah, we've seen it from regime after regime after regime. You know, they bring him in 2012, you know, he has that great season in 2013. So then all of a sudden, you've got a new coaching staff coming in, and they count on Josh Gordon, and it doesn't work out. They get burned. But then you change everything again, and they kind of wait out Josh Gordon. I think that's a lot of, you know, two things. One, the result of some instability. Not some instability, a lot of instability. And also, look, the ownership here stayed committed to Josh Gordon and his recovery, and you know, that part of it is a credit to them. But, you know, John Dorsey, it didn't take him long to move on from Gordon. And in hindsight, he probably should have moved on when Josh didn't show up for training camp. But once they got that second kind of incident with Josh, it was, that's it. They're done. They're moving on.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard not to be enamored when you see him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a coach, if you're Todd Haley or Hugh Jackson or anybody trying to coach a football team, Adam Henry, I mean, when you see Josh Gordon step foot on the football field, it's like, wow. I mean, not only does he have the size and the speed, he's got tremendous hands. I mean, really good hands. You know, he catches it with his hands, and he is just a really good, would have been a Hall of Fame caliber receiver had he had not had all of these suspensions. That is how good he is. But unfortunately, you know, they did. They just relied too much on him, and they're suffering for it now, because at this point in the season, there are no Josh Gordons or guys of that caliber really sitting around waiting for a phone call.
So, I mean, back to the original question then, can Baker bounce back? Not because of Baker necessarily, but does he have the weapons to bounce back on Sunday? Because this is going to be, or it should be, if the Browns want to win, it's going to need to be a shootout. And so can Baker, on his own, elevate this offense and elevate this team?
Well, the only reason why, like I said, I think he has a chance to have a halfway decent game in Tampa is because they have such a bad defense. If they had an even like middle of the road defense and they were going against this high flying Bucs offense that has been scoring a ton of points, they're number 8 in points. They're the number 1 passing offense in the NFL. They've got Mike Evans, they've got DeSean Jackson, they've got Chris Godwin. You know, then I would say there's no way. But because they have such a horrible pass offense, if you can get some of these guys into the game kind of quickly, if you can get Jarvis going and he has a decent game early on, and if Damian Ratley can come through and make some plays for you, if Antonio Callaway can make one or two of those vintage deep ball catches on a go route, you know, then maybe, you know, which he should be able to do in this game, you know, then maybe they can steal this one against the 2-3 Bucs on the road. But it's going to have to be a game where you score some points, unless, of course, the defense swipes the ball a couple of times from Jameis, and that can happen.
Yeah, and that's the one thing they can really rely on, because Jameis Winston has played six quarters this season, and he's thrown four interceptions.
Yep.
He's going to give you opportunities. You know, can this defense take advantage of him? I know Craig Williams is going to have them fired up to try and come away with some of those turnovers. We're going to get to some Twitter questions here shortly, but first I want to tell everyone about some events coming up at our sponsor, Sibling Revelry Brewing. This first one is Saturday, October 20th from 2 to 6. It's Angels on the Avenue, and Sibling Revelry Brewing are presenting Rocktoberfest. They'll have a live act, Sloppy Joe, will be performing from 2 to 6 p.m., so you'll have that going on. Special limited 22-ounce bombers of Sibling Revelry Maple Syrup Fall Ale will be for sale, and you can win money. $1,000 first prize if you enter into a $10 cash raffle, $250 second prize. It's a special fundraising effort that benefits St. Augustine Health Ministries, a mission-driven, faith-based, not-for-profit organization founded by Catholic Charities, Diocese of Cleveland. So 2 to 6 on Saturday. Now, here's what I was talking about earlier for parents, right? You don't have a lot of kid events at breweries, right? But this one, Kids Gloga Class, October 21st, 12:30 to 2, and also 4 to 5:30. It's kids yoga. Ages 5 to 13, they can show up. They do crafts. They get to learn some yoga poses and things like that. And parents, you can enjoy a beer.
You know what, Dan? This sounds like it has your name written all over it.
Maybe.
With your kids. I think you need to bring Charlotte to Gloga. I think she would love it.
I probably. Pumpkin carving as well, October 25th, 4 to 10 o'clock in the Sibling Revelry Brewing Tap Room. That's in Westlake. Bring your own pumpkin. They'll provide the tools, and of course, they'll have beer there. And there's a couple samplings at Heinen's in Shaker Heights and Heinen's in Chagrin Falls, October 26th. From 4 to 6 p.m., so you can check those out there. Again, thanks to Sibling Revelry Brewing for sponsoring us here on Orange and Brown Talk. Let's get to some Twitter questions. We'll start with this wide receiver position. And Bearded Browns fan asks, how aggressive will John Dorsey be trying to get Baker help at wide receiver? So far, you know, they haven't been real aggressive in the sense of making a trade or anything like that, but we're still a couple weeks out from the deadline. Went out and got Breshad Perriman, worked out Rashard Matthews, promoted Damari Scott from the practice squad. So no big moves. They're trying to find something mostly internally to try and fix this.
Yeah, you know, I do think it's difficult to bring a guy in at this point in the season, expect him to learn your offense. Even with a guy like Dez Bryant, a guy would have to come in here and really memorize the terminology to be able to go out there and be really effective. And that's hard to do. I mean, Perriman's in the situation of trying to learn how to do that right now. But I still think they should do it. I still think that he should be very aggressive in trying to find a receiver or two. On the, you know, that could be on the trading block, or that somehow that they could acquire him before the trading deadline on October 30th. Will it actually happen? Who knows? Because, again, it hasn't happened by now, but I really do think that, you know, they should be at least looking at the Amari Coopers and those kind of guys. And you know that I even suggested that they should try to trade for Odell Beckham Jr., not so much for this year, but for the years going forward, because I think this team will be ready to contend next year and the year after. But I don't think the Giants are willing to part with him. But the more you hear the owner talking about him and, you know, all those different kinds of things, you have to wonder, are they coming to the end of their rope with Odell Beckham Jr.? Now, there's a lot of cap concerns with him. He would have a lot. They would have a ton of dead money next year if they trade him this year. You know, it's just a matter of, do they, you know, with the compensation that they get in terms of the draft pick or picks, outweigh the dead money that they would have to have on their cap next year and how they could work that all out.
Yeah, and you know, the Browns, of course, already have a ton of money invested at that position in Jarvis Landry, too. Now they have a ton of cap space, so they can certainly afford something like that. Amari Cooper is kind of interesting for the right price. This is a guy that has a lot of drops. I don't know that he's going to come in and live up to that first-round potential, but if Oakland's willing to sell for pennies on the dollar, I think you take a shot at Amari Cooper. I wouldn't give up anything higher than like a fourth-rounder for him, so I don't know that you'd be able to get him at that price. But if you could get him for a pick like that, maybe you'd take a chance on him.
Yeah, you know, I think those are the things that you have to look into. And if you know that you're going to have a guy for a number of years, and we're talking about guys that are still pretty young. I mean, yeah. Odell might be turning 26, but I mean, he's somewhere around there. He's 25, probably almost 26 years old. But you know you're going to have him for another 5 years. So I think it would be worth it. And like you said, Amari Cooper, look into it. There's other guys in other places, like maybe a Devontae Parker in Miami. I haven't really researched it thoroughly, but you have to find a guy that has sort of worn out his welcome in a place, or for whatever reason, a team is willing to unload this receiver. They need a change of scenery. Those are the kind of guys the Browns are going to have to look for.
And the other thing to keep in mind is John Dorsey does have a history of being able to find wide receivers in kind of strange spots. Antonio Callaway is similar to how he found Tyreek Hill, a guy that has, you know, high round talent, but dropped for reasons down in the draft, and he was able to get him a little bit cheaper. Albert Wilson is a guy who's playing really well in Miami. I believe he was an undrafted free agent that Dorsey signed. So this is a guy that kind of knows what he likes in a wide receiver, mm-hmm. and he'll figure out ways to get those guys in different ways if it's not a high draft pick. So this could just be something that gets solved in the offseason. You'd like them to do something now because you want this team to try and win now, and you want Baker Mayfield to have weapons, but maybe it's something that doesn't get solved until March or April.
And you know, that very well may be, but that's going to make for a long yep. season for Baker Mayfield. And that's unfortunate because you can't take your number one pick and throw him out there without a good enough supporting cast. It's just not the way to break in a rookie quarterback, because they can start to lose their confidence. And when you look at a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the reason why they have 16 touchdown passes right now, which is second in the NFL, only to the Steelers' 18, is because they have guys like Mike Evans, yep. DeSean Jackson, and Chris Godwin. Okay, each of those guys have like either 3 or 4 touchdown catches for a total of 13 right now. And that's huge. Do you know how many touchdown passes the Browns have this year, Dan?
I don't even want to think about it.
Think about it, Dan.
Not that many.
Give me an answer.
Oh, my gosh. Let me think. 9?
6.
Oh, see, I almost went that low, but I felt like it was really low.
They've got 6. It was 2 for Tyrod Taylor and 4 for Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's 4 are tied for 31st in the NFL. He's thrown 4 touchdown passes in 4 appearances, okay? That's not enough. And is it because he doesn't have a good arm? No. He's got a really good arm. He has exceptional arm talent. It's because he doesn't have enough weapons. And it's just an unfortunate way to throw your number one pick out there. So if there's anything they can do, they need to do.
Okay, well, then let's get to these questions that came in from M. Frederick on Twitter and then C. Sparrow on Twitter. And both of them brought up Duke Johnson. You know, I always try to avoid the, you know, kind of blanket statement of, well, you got to get this guy on the field and get him the ball. But I've got to say, with Duke Johnson, I can't understand why he's not getting on the field more and why he's not getting the ball more, because we've seen it now for going back to last year. When the football is in his hands, really good things happen. And I tweeted this earlier this week. In the game against Baltimore, he had 2 big plays in overtime that helped set up, after the Willie's catch, that helped set up that winning field goal.
Mm-hmm. 3, actually. 3 straight runs.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing he can do. The Browns' scoring drive at the end of the Chargers game, mm-hmm. At the end of the first half against the Chargers, I mean, it was Duke Johnson. He got them in position to kind of set up that scoring drive.
Right.
So, you know, to me, good things happen when Duke Johnson has the football, and I think they have to find a way to at least force the ball to him a little bit.
Well, yeah, it's kind of curious, because I agree with you 100%. I've been writing it, I've been saying it, I think we've been talking about it, that they need to use Duke more in that capacity. And every time we ask Hugh Jackson about it, he says the same thing, that they need to use Duke more. But he's not running the offense right now. Todd Haley's running the offense, and for whatever reason, he hasn't used Duke in that way. But right now, they have no choice. They have no choice. They don't have enough pass catchers to not use Duke in that capacity. He led the Browns with 73 receptions last year for 600 some yards, and they need to get him out there, and they need to put him in the slot. They need to split him wide. They need to be able to, Baker needs to use him in the shorter passing game. He needs to get some confidence that way. He talks about wanting to get the ball into the hands of his playmakers. Get it to Duke, let him stiff arm his way down the field for more yards, it will help immensely if they do that.
And this team needs big plays this week.
Yeah.
And Duke is a guy that can get them big plays. The other name that M. Frederick brought up was, of course, Nick Chubb. That's a tough one just because I do think they like Carlos Hyde's ability to kind of grind out yards a little bit. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you need big plays. And Nick Chubb has been your big play back so far when you've handed him the ball. It hasn't been super consistent. You know, we don't know if he can handle 25 carries a game right now or 15 carries a game, whatever it would be. But to me, you've got to give Nick Chubb some opportunities, especially this week, because you've got to hit on some big plays.
Yeah, that's been a little curious, too. I mean, you know that obviously when Nick comes into the game, they're not going to throw him the ball for the most part.
Yeah.
So that's in some places they have used Duke instead of him because you don't know whether it's going to be a pass or a run in that regard. But he has shown that when you put the ball in his hands, for the most part, he's going to make some yards. He had a nice 19-yard run in this past game. There was a holding call on it that didn't help and wiped out 10 of those yards. But for the most part, his average is really good, and he's going to churn out some yards for you. So that's another place where they can get the ball into the hands of Nick a little bit more. And maybe, you know, Seth DeVolve hasn't been healthy much this season, but you know, he's somebody that they need to use a little bit more in the passing game. David Njoku caught the touchdown pass last week. If he can be consistent, you know, you can rely on him a little bit more. They've got to get creative because what's happening again with Jarvis Landry is he's getting double teamed. He's getting coverage rolled to him. If a team takes him out of the game, there hasn't consistently been other people stepping up enough, and they need it's got to be all hands on deck now in the passing game.
Yeah. You know, for Todd Haley, he's coming from Pittsburgh where it was line up Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster
right.
and Le'Veon Bell and run your offense. So it's a little different here in Cleveland with what they have, and they need to figure out a way to get the ball in Duke Johnson's hands and maybe see if he can spring Nick Chubb. You give him six carries and see if he can spring a couple of them. I don't know. There's got to be a way to do that to get this offense going.
The magic number for him is three. I mean, he carries the ball like three times a game. That's been his most. The other two games, it was two.
Yeah.
So he's got to like get over the three carry hump. And
just get him to like five or six. And you know what? It'll probably mean less of Carlos Hyde. That just sort of is what it is. You've got to hit on some big plays at some point. You mentioned Seth DeValve, so that was brought up in a Twitter question. You know, he's a guy that just hasn't been able to get healthy.
Right.
I don't know if he's healthy enough to really play a whole lot right now, other than on special teams and coming in every now and again for some snaps.
Yeah.
Question about the linebackers from our buddy Paul Brown in London, who I guess was in Cleveland this week and enjoying the Muni lot, made the trip from London to here. He brought up the linebackers. He basically asked who the fourth linebacker is at the moment right now. That would be Jannard Avery, if I'm not mistaken, right? No, he would be the third linebacker.
Yeah, he's the
Am
third
I forgetting
linebacker.
Somebody? Yeah, so Jannard Avery is the third linebacker. I'm curious to see how he gets used.
Yeah, I think he'll be at the weak side spot.
Probably.
I think he'll be at Chris Kirksey's weak side spot this week. And you know, he's played very well, especially from a pass rushing standpoint. So whoever they put out there, what they have to do is set the edge. It's what they're not doing, and they can't get embarrassed like this anymore in the running game. I mean, it's been a joke. And now the Bucs don't really run the ball all that great or all that much. They're more a pass-oriented offense. But still, there's no way they can be giving up 269 yards rushing like they did last week.
I don't think it's going to be an issue this week. I don't think the Browns are going to be in their base defense a whole lot this week. I think you're going to see a lot of Bobby Calhoun out there at nickel. A lot of two linebacker looks. And the other thing is you got Jabril Peppers who can play close to the line. Derek Kindred is a guy they love close to the line. So I think that's the route they would go with that. You know, a fourth linebacker if they really needed one. I think it would probably be one of those two safeties.
Yeah, and you know, so they can try some different alignments and formations and things like that, especially because I'm sure the Bucs play a lot of three wide. So you're going to see some sub defenses, and it'll be again interesting to see how they use their personnel in that way. And another thing that we have to talk about is EJ Gaines.
Yeah.
EJ Gaines came into work today and complained of concussion symptoms. And he was put into the concussion protocol, and now TJ Carey is going to have to step up for him. He's going to be, EJ Gaines is out this game. He started the last two games, and he played well because he knows Greg Williams' defense inside and out, played three or four seasons with him, I think maybe three seasons under Greg Williams with the Rams. And so that's a big, huge blow. I thought EJ stepped in there and did a really, really nice job. And you don't want to be down to this point when you're playing against a high-flying, number one pass offense in the NFL. It's just not a good day. It was like the day that Derek Willis broke his collarbone, you know, heading into the game last week.
Yeah.
You know, on the Friday before the game in practice. That's what this feels like to me. EJ Gaines going down a couple days before the game with a concussion. It's just not what they need right now.
Yeah, and, you know, we haven't even mentioned O.J. Howard. Yeah. You know, he's their all-world tight end in Tampa. He can make a lot of catches. He can stack up some yardage. So, you know, he's a guy that we know how tight ends have caused problems for this football team over yeah. and over and over. No, it doesn't matter who the defensive coordinator has been, but especially, you know, since Greg has gotten here in his system, you know that Tampa Bay is going to try and exploit that with O.J. Howard.
Yeah, and you've got Joe Schobert out this week.
Yeah.
And so not only do you have E.J. Gaines out, but Joe Schobert is out, and he is the quarterback of this defense. He gets the signal. He makes the calls. He gets the signals from Greg. And now Christian Kirksey has that responsibility. And he's played middle linebacker before. He's played inside before. But this is going to be a big difference for him. He's going to have a lot of responsibility in this game to get all those calls right against this high-flying pass offense. And like you said, they're going to work the middle of the field. They're going to use the tight end over the middle, and they're going to try to exploit that with OJ. And it's going to be a big, big game for Christian.
All right. So that'll do it for this edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. You and I are off to Tampa, which, by the way, folks, Tampa and their press box, best press box food in the business.
Oh, yes.
At least it's got to be up there.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No question.
They have
about
like
it.
Little stations, and
it's a beautiful thing.
It's fantastic. We're spoiled when we go to Tampa.
We like to say on Sunday it's like having 16 Thanksgivings, right?
That's what it's like there.
You know? I mean, you just like really have to be careful about yeah. how much you eat during the football season.
The other thing I run into is in the southern press boxes,
yeah?
They have sweet tea.
Oh.
I'm a sucker for it. And so it's a real problem.
It's going to be 90 degrees down there.
I know.
So
we'll take it. Again, we're going to be spoiled this weekend as we head down to Tampa for this Bucs game. And of course, we will cover it all for you over at cleveland.com/Browns. And we'll try to have a post-game podcast on Sunday as well. So you look out for that Sunday night or Monday morning. So that'll do it for the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, brought to you by Sibling Revelry Brewing. For Mary Kay Cabot, I am Dan Lobby. Thanks for listening, everybody.